For what we really want to do. So, beginning with today, this afternoon, we'd like to talk positively about some of the basic steps we need to take in finding out what the scripture has to say. Of course, we already mentioned the fact that the kind of method we'll be talking about is called grammatical historical interpretation, which is such an interpretation of the writer's language as is required by the law of grammar and the facts of history. Therefore, throughout our discussion, grammar, the importance of grammar and history will come out. Now, before I talk, go any further, let me just ask you a few questions. 11. We say this. We should love one another. Now, what is love? Of course, to love is to seek God's end in the one loved. Okay? To love is to seek God's end in the one loved. That is a more comprehensive definition of love. But to say it more simplified, we can say, well, if you love a person, you will seek that their best of the person whom you love, right? But in a more comprehensive way, I'm saying to love is to seek God's end, God's purpose in the person whom you love. Therefore, okay, 1 John 3:11 say we should love one another. Therefore, in another word, we should seek God's end in one another's life. Is that correct? Right? It's logic, isn't it? This sounds good, right? It's not heretic. Okay, give you another example here. In Colossians 1:15, in whom, namely, in his beloved Son, we have the forgiveness of sins. That's what the Bible says. In whom, namely in his beloved Son, we have the forgiveness of sins. Now, to have forgiveness of sins is not to be condemned. If my sin is forgiven, I will not be condemned, or I shall not be condemned. Am I on your way? Well, goodbye. Let me see what I can do. Then let me move my chair. Okay. Sins, to have forgiveness of sins mean not to be condemned. Therefore, the meaning of that passage is, okay, therefore, the three dots mean, therefore, in God's beloved Son, we are not condemned, right? Yeah. Nothing wrong with it. This is not heresy. This is truth. Okay, are you ready? Let me put that here. Now, really, it's not important. Examples, my illustration, for you to think something. Yeah, these are truth. These are not heresies. These are not heretics. Right? Okay, I need this sometimes, so let me show you. Okay, you don't really have to take this down, but I try to illustrate one point, so you don't have to copy all this down. Now, in Psalm 28, verse 7, the scripture says, the Lord is my shield. That's in the Bible. Okay, I just copied it from the Bible this morning. Okay. Now, what is shield? Of course, we know that the shield, Chinese talk about it, tenpai. The shield does not have self-consciousness, right? When you have a tenpai, a shield, of course, this is dead thing. It's not a person. So it doesn't have any self-consciousness, right? The shield cannot think. It, of course, cannot communicate. You know, right? Now, Psalm 28:7 say, The Lord is my shield. Therefore, the Lord, Jehovah, doesn't have self-consciousness. He cannot think. He cannot communicate. Right?
No.
No. Good. Let me give you another example here. Psalm 18:2 say, the Lord is my fortress. The Lord is my fortress. Now we know that a fortress is constructed by man, right? Therefore, the Lord is constructed by man. Right? Do you agree?
No.
Okay, let me ask you. Why, in this case, you do not protest? And then, in this case, we are using the same logic. Right? We are using the same logic. In this case, you agree. You did not protest. But in this case, you protest. Why we are using the same logic? Why is that? Why you protest in the first instance, in the first case? Then you protest in the second case. Why? Same logic. What's the trouble? What is the trouble? Because they are different kind of literature. Right? In this case, this is a straight statement. Therefore, we can use that kind of logic. But over here, in this kind of literature, this is different kind of literature, right? This is poetry. Therefore, the language used there is figurative language, not to be taken literally. The trouble with this kind of thinking is that to take the figurative language literally, that's a trouble. Okay, so I use those two. This is not very important, but just to illustrate the point, I want you to see, namely, it is very important for us to find out what kind of literary form we are talking about when we come to exegete or come to interpret the Bible. Okay, therefore, what I really want to show you is that what you have in your, what I gave out in your outline, steps we need to take in the process of interpreting the Bible. The first step is to know, to recognize first, the literary forms of the particular passage. Okay? The literary form. Do you have your outline with you? If not, let me show this out here a little bit. This is not quite same, but... Okay. I cut this out because we are not dealing with Greek, so we don't have to worry about that textual criticism. But if you are dealing with the Greek text, you need to deal with that part. So therefore, the first step, so far as we are concerned, first step is to deal with the literary form of the passage. Okay? We need to look at the literary form of the passage. Namely, what I'm getting at is the steps or the way you interpret one particular literary form is different from when you are interpreting the different literary forms. That's what I'm getting at here. Okay? So keep in mind, when you pick up a literature, the first question you should ask is what kind of literary form is this? Okay? So I'm going to show you at least four or five different literary forms. The first kind of literary form is called, if you need me to speak in Chinese, speak up so I say it. The first kind of literary form is called discursive and logical literature. Discursive 就是一个很长的谈论的, 比如说一篇很长的讲道, 或者是说一个 logical literature, 就是 you use logic to prove your point. These are called logical literature. Okay. The characteristics of the discursive literature, well, logical literature is the presentation of ideas in argumentative form. Through arguments, you present the material. Well, you present the message, you present the material through argumentative form, argue. So there's a lot of arguments going on there. Okay. Now, we do have the example of this kind of literary form are found in Ephesus, Sushin, Shinira Sushin. The prophetic sermon in the Old Testament, 就是在旧约一些先知他们的讲道，或者是耶稣的很长的讲论，耶稣的讲道， the longer discourses of Jesus. Something, for example, in John, in the Gospel of John, we do have quite a few of those there. These are the examples. Okay, these are the examples. Now, how does this function? This kind of literature appears primarily to the intellect. So I have been saying our intellect, our 理智, is very, very important. Because this kind of biblical literature appears to our intellect so that we understand. Therefore, since these are the natures, characteristic of this kind of literature, therefore, when we want to interpret, when we want to try to understand this kind of message, we need to carefully observe the logical development, which is very important. If we miss the logical development, okay, of the piece of literature, we lost it forever. We never understand that. So the development of the careful tracing of the logical development is very, 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 very important in dealing with this kind of literature. Okay? Am I speaking too fast? No, okay. You are speaking too rapid, tell me. I try to slow down. Unless you understand, there's no use for me talking. Now, how do we trace the logical development? This is a very important thing. If I have time, I will just give you a few examples for you to trace the logical development. I may even do it. Okay, let me finish this first anyway. Now, in tracing the logical development, the connectives, namely conjunctions, become very, very crucial. Conjunctions or connectives. You know what conjunction is? Therefore, because, that, and although, etc. Now, in our mind, we always... Okay, let me put it this way. I have two sentences. Sentence number one. I am sitting on this is called a high chair. Right? I'm sitting on a high chair while I'm teaching. Okay. The second sentence is... The second sentence is, I don't want to be tired unnecessarily. So, okay, unnecessary. Now, third sentence is say, I can teach longer. Let me repeat again. That one sentence. I'm sitting on a high chair while I'm lecturing. Sentence number two. I don't get tired easily. First sentence. I can lecture longer. Now, if I just throw at you those three sentences, you still do not comprehend what I'm getting at there. Right? Those three sentences has to be organized into some kind of logical way so that you understand why I'm sitting here. You say, okay, I'm sitting on a high chair while I'm teaching because by doing this, I will not get tired easily, right? And so that I can lecture longer. Now, it makes sense. But if you just leave those three sentences unrelated, you don't know what I'm talking about. Now, how do I put those three sentences related? By conjunction. Therefore, conjunction become very, very important in tracing the development of the logic of this kind of literature. And I'm going to show you one example. Paul say in Romans 1:15-17, let me even read verse 14, because there is, it starts with conjunction, the so. Therefore it's important to look what's going on. Okay, if you will turn to your Bible, if you have English Bible, the best. If not, Chinese probably help, or as well, but Chinese translation left out a few important conjunctions. You may compare Chinese, why don't you read English anyway? Okay, let me read from verse 14, and you can follow in your Chinese or whatever English, whatever you have. Verse 14. I am under obligation both to Greeks and to barbarians, both to the wise and to the foolish. Okay, so I am eager to preach the gospel to you also who are in Rome. Now, why is this? Why Paul say I'm eager to present the gospel to you also who are in Rome? Why? Because 14 says, I am under obligation both to Greeks and to barbarians, both to the wise and to the foolish. Thus become the cause. The cause. And this is a result. The result or the effect is that so that I am eager to preach the gospel to you also who are in Rome. Why? Because I'm indebted to all these people. Okay, now, why I am eager to preach the gospel to you also who are in Rome? Well, let me start from verse 14. Probably that's more clear. I am under obligation both to Greeks and to barbarians, both to the wise and to the foolish. So I am eager to preach the gospel to you also who are in Rome. Why? That's because God called me. Because God appeared to me in dream last night. Therefore, I have no other choice. I better go to preach the gospel to you who are also in Rome. Is that a reason? No. What's the reason?
Not ashamed of the gospel.
Right. For I am not ashamed of the gospel. Now, this becomes important message. A lot of people miss this. Okay. The reason why Paul said, I'm eager to preach the gospel to you who are also in Rome, is not because God spoke to me last night in my dream or I saw a vision. No. The reason why is because I am not ashamed of the gospel. If you are not ashamed of the gospel, okay, if you are not ashamed of the gospel, you don't have to wait till you dream a strange dream last night. You don't have to wait till you see a kind of strange vision before you feel obligated to spread the gospel away. Now, how many people miss this point by not observing the logical relation here? Now, I'm wondering what I mentioned about here. Talk about why I am in the full-time ministry. Not because I saw a vision, not because I dream a strange dream. Just because of that kind of burden I talked about a moment ago. Okay? If you are not ashamed of the gospel, then you are under obligation to spread the gospel. Do you get a biblical message? A lot of people miss this. Okay, let me ask one more question. Why Paul say, why I am not ashamed of the gospel. Why?
Power of God.
Huh?
It is the power of God.
How do you know?
Through faith.
No, not through faith. Through what he say there.
Yeah,
for the reason why I am not ashamed of the gospel is because the gospel is the power of God for salvation. Okay? So if you are convinced that the gospel is the power of God for salvation, then you should not be ashamed of the gospel. And if you are not ashamed of the gospel, then you are under obligation to preach, to share the gospel, okay? Now let me ask you some more questions there. It is the power of God for salvation to everyone who has faith, to the Jew first, and also to the Greeks. Why the gospel is the power of God? Why? Huh?
God reveals the, you know, for in it, in the gospel, the righteousness of God.
Right! Okay, you don't have to go to search for answer somewhere like a liang guang to get the answer. It's clearly said there in the Bible. For in the gospel, in it, the righteousness of God is revealed. Okay? Do you get that? Now, how many people miss that message? It's plenty. It's very plenty there. For in it, the righteousness of God is revealed through faith for faith. Okay? Now let me ask a question. Is there any relationship between the righteousness of God and the power of God? Can you see it clearly? Is there any relationship between the power of God and the righteousness of God? Huh? Is there any?
Righteousness of God is God's nature.
Is it? Is righteousness of God the nature of God? Is it? Read it. Read it. That's all you have to read. Do. You don't have to go. You don't have to look for Liang Guang. Wait for Liang Guang to come. It's already there. Liang Guang is there already. Look it. Why? What again? Huh? What do you find there?
It says, for I am not ashamed of the gospel,
okay.
For it is the power of God.
Okay.
And then when you talk about righteousness, it says, for in it.
Okay, in it, and then what? What's that?
The righteousness of God is revealed through the gospel.
So okay.
One is talking about the object, and then what the other is talking about.
Okay, let me put it this way. Okay. In the gospel, the righteousness of God is revealed. And the gospel is the power of God, right? Is there any relationship between the righteousness of God and the power of God? They are related. You cannot separate them. Okay, let me say something here. We are going to talk about some more, but let me just interject something here at this moment. Many people think, well, righteousness of God means that, well, even though... No, other people think that, well, the gospel is like this. Even though I commit sin, I'm a sinner, but God just justify me. 神称我为义, 虽然我犯罪了, 神称我为义, 我是义人, okay? 再见啦, 神啊, 谢谢你, 我已经义人了, bye bye. Other people think that way. 已经, 我已经得到神的义了, bye bye. 好, 谢谢你, bye bye, 我已经义人了. If we just get that, we misinterpret the gospel. Okay? Because what is the righteousness of God? The righteousness of God is not merely 神称你为义. The righteousness of God is also a power which is operating in your life to change your life. So if you just say, okay, I'm 罪人, God, 你称我为义, thank you, bye bye, and I go back to live in a sinful life and say I'm still a sinner and just come back, God, you turn away, tomorrow I go out, turn away, that's not what gospel says. Now we are going to look at this also in the book of Romans in a few minutes, probably later on, probably not in a few minutes, later on. But this is very important. If you have the righteousness of God in your life, that is the manifestation of the power of God. Therefore, okay, you not only God turn you way in, as well the power of God operate in your life to change your entire life. And that is the gospel. Okay? And I'm going to show that in the Epistle of Romans later on. But what I'm getting at here is, see, as I said, that in logical literature, we need to see the development of the, this is what I said, we need to carefully observe the logical development to get the full message. Okay? We need to get the full message. And I just illustrate this through this, the thing you just saw a moment ago, by carefully paying attention to the connectives, conjunctions. And let me ask you, how many of you ever found what we found in this passage before? That kind of thing I said. Yes.
The power of God changed within yourself, but I couldn't see that before.
Yeah, of course, I have not. Yeah, in the passage, I don't clearly say that, but you just talk about power of God is there. Namely, this passage makes it clear, okay, the power of God and the righteousness of God cannot be separated. Now that passage makes it clear here. This passage. Okay, let me. I think this is important for you to see. So let me take time to say it again. Now, okay, you see, the gospel. Okay, it is the power of God, right? So I'm not ashamed of the gospel. Why? Because the gospel is the power of God for salvation, right? For in it, what is it? In the gospel, the righteousness of God is revealed. Okay? Okay, you see this?
It's not the power of God, it's a description.
Is that the power of God? No, in this, what is the power of God?
The power of God.
Is it?
That's the description.
Huh? You look at the whole thing. Where is that it referred to? For in it, the righteousness of God is revealed. What is it referred to?
Gospel.
Right? How well, okay. Okay, let's look at it here. The gospel is the power of God for salvation to everyone who has faith, etc., 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 right? Now, this is talking about the gospel. For in it, what that is referred to? The gospel. The gospel is the righteousness of God. Right? Okay, let me. I need to get my pen. That pen doesn't write well, but let me get it. Just a moment. The gospel is power of God. But in the gospel, the righteousness of God is manifested. Therefore, there are very close connection between the power of God and righteousness of God. Is that clear? From this. Right? Why? Okay. Let me put it this way. Why? Over here, we have four here, right? Now, four give reasons for something. Now, what is the reason? Reason for something. What is that something? So here, okay, let me just stop here and talk about the importance of tracing the development of the logic. Let me ask this. Four, when we see four there, namely, this sentence gives some reason for something, right? Is that clear?
Mm-hmm.
It gives reason for something. Now, what is that something?
Not ashamed of the gospel.
Is it?
He's saying, I'm not ashamed of the gospel for two reasons. One and two.
Is it? As it appear in the English. Now, let's just look at the English. The way it's translated here. Let's not try to complicate it and go back to Greek. But let's just take the English translation to be accurate. Okay, let's see what that say. Do you see something here? Okay. let me ask. I'm going to. For this is the power of God for salvation. Okay. This is the reason for what?
For this.
Right? This is a reason for this. How shall I? Okay. This is a reason. No, this is a reason for. Put it this way. Right? Green is a reason for that. Purple. Okay. Now. The black is reason for what?
To everyone who has faith.
Huh?
To everyone who has faith.
Is it? Is it? Okay, let me get away from here. So you can see. Because this is very important. Okay. Green is a reason for purple. Right? Now, black is reason for what?
For salvation.
Huh? Right. It's for green. Is it? If we change it to red, for it is the power of God, point, semicolon, and for in it, then we will say green and black are reason for purple. But at this stand, green is the reason for purple and the black is reason for green. Do you see that?
Yeah.
So when we have three things together, the first question you ought to be asking is that, okay, how are related? Let me see. The first one is purple. Then we have green. Then we have black. Now the question we have asked is there are two possibilities. Without looking at the text. One possibility is that those two together are reason for this. Now that's one possibility. Here, one possibility is that those two together parallel. Green and black are in parallel, 平行, as a reason for purple, right? Another way is that green is the reason for the purple, and the black is the reason for the green. That's one possibility. Let me ask, is there any possibility that black is a reason for purple? Is there any other kind of possibility? Never. That doesn't make sense. See, that is the way our mind functions. That this is called, sometimes we call it coordination of thought, etc. Okay. So, over here, we have to ask in our particular text, is the model this way or model this way? Okay, is this one or is this one? But this makes it very clear. Makes very clear here. For it is the power of God for salvation. Right? And then come here. For in it. So it makes it clear. Black is the reason for green. So it ends up with, I say, gospel is the power of God. And in gospel, the righteousness of God is revealed. Do you see that kind of coordination now? The relationship? Right? Now, if such is the case, the power of God and the righteousness of God are related, are closely related. So, we cannot talk about righteousness of God without talking about the power of God as well. Okay? And this is what we see from this passage. But important thing is, if we can even substantiate or support this, by the epistle of Romans, and which we can. This is really the time for me to introduce this one, but I show you anyway. And I will pick this up later on as well. When you look at the epistle of Romans, okay, it's talk about the righteousness of God. let's talk about now here justification. Namely, God treat us 没有罪, righteous, relational on that basis. Relational, namely, originally you are my enemy. Now I don't consider you as my enemy. Okay, you are justified. Justification here. But if we only talk about justification, we have not talked about God's salvation for believers yet. Because the for the salvation of the believers include both justification and sanctification. That is, okay, the power of God make a believer actually clean, no sin. Okay, namely, over here, we have sin. But God would not condemn us, but God did not stop there. The power of God actually make us clean. Okay, that is the full gospel. Okay, so we not only get this message from these opening verses of Romans, the way I said it, is also we get another evidence, support, from the way Epistle to Romans is structured. This is too early to talk about structure of the book, and we are going to talk about this. Hopefully, either tonight or tomorrow morning. Okay? I wish I had time to give you some exercise for you to analyze the structure of the several books of the Bible. If you get that, you surely go into your mind. You won't lose it.
Gospel, 还有那个 the power of God and the righteousness of God.
Yeah.
真的是有关系, 可是什么叫 righteousness of God?
Righteousness of God. Right. I know. And I know this question is coming. Therefore, I prepare to talk about what is righteousness of God in about 2 hours. So wait till I know. Well, I'm going to take you, introduce about how to study a world. And in that, I'm trying to use this. And actually, if you find out what righteousness of God means, and a lot of the people, like me, so many times for past, I don't know, since I was not born, but when I was very young, until, I think about 10 years ago, or sometime year ago, when I did the study, which I'm going to introduce to you, go through it. When I discovered that, before I discovered that, the Epistle of Romans does not make any sense to me. I had a difficult understanding. Why is this? Puzzled me greatly. Until one day I sat down and said, okay, I better go to look up the concordance. Use the concordance. That's the reason why I'm going to teach you how to use the concordance. You get the concordance. Find out what the righteousness of God, and when I find it, I thought that I had the wrong idea about righteousness of God. When I find the right idea of the righteousness of God, the Epistle of Romans make it very clear, very logical. I become excited. Okay, and that's the kind of thing I try to do. So it's taking me about 2 hours to tell you what is the righteousness of God. So not now, because if you start that way, we won't finish what I want to say. But that's a very important concept. Okay? So actually, I hope that when you learn this method and begin to use it, you will get excited and probably you forget about going to bed. And your wife or your husband, that whatever happened to be, may sometimes come this way, well, it's too late. And that's what happened to me. Anyway, that's my problem. Many times I get so excited in my study and I just forget about what time it is. Stay up till 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. And my wife, I say, well, tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock you have a class. You have to get up about 6 o'clock. You have only 5 hours to sleep. But when you get excited, you don't get tired anyway. I just go to class and then come back and take a long nap. Make it up when I get excited about this. And really, this is very, very exciting when you begin to search this and find the kind of the mind you never thought of. Well, I preach too much. Then come back here to talk about this. Because this is really very exciting. A moment ago, Reverend Tai asked about what is in your ministry when you get excited. What is the high point? This is one of them. When you discover something, you get excited and even not get tired anyway. For a while. Okay, is that clear about the discourse about logical literature? And what we keep in mind and what we should be searching, etc. Second kind of literary form is called prose narrative. the characteristics or the nature of the prose narrative is the presentation of evangelical history. Now, it is not merely talk about history as such. Of course, it is history, but particularly evangelical history. By evangelical history, I mean how God acted in the history, okay? How God acted in the history for the redemption of human race. That's what I mean by evangelical history. Okay? Something God acted within the history. Now, I'm using this evangelical history in this good sense. Let me explain again here. Evangelical history, or sometimes people call it, I'll spell it out for you anyway. I'm talking about this. History of salvation, or sometimes they call it salvation history, or even sometimes they just use the German word Heilgeschichte. Now, these words are being used in two different ways. One way is the bad sense of the word. Salvation history, or history of salvation. By that they mean, particularly by this, the Neo-Orthodox people. They will say, well, I cannot deny God did not act. Okay, they will say, yeah, okay, God acted to save his people. But how did God act? The act of God cannot be observed in a history. Okay, it is totally above our history. God, there is no supernatural order, so to speak. More or less a kind of a deism. Rather than theism. Now, this is a big word. Let me explain what you mean by deism and theism. This is now deism. Now, in Chinese translation, I don't know how they translate it. Theism, usually they translate Yo Shen Lun. But deism is sometimes also called Yo Shen Lun, but they are different things. Okay, what is deism? Deism believes there is a God. Okay, this God created the universe or created the world long, long time ago, and after he created the world, okay, he just let it run. He doesn't care. Bye bye. Whatever you want to do. Just God is like a watchmaker. Now, the one who made this watch, after he finished making this watch, he let this watch go. So he has no control over this watch anymore. Okay? Deism 就是说有神存在在上面讲起来, 神创造宇宙以后啊, 神就让他不管了, 神根本就不管 这个宇宙做什么, 那个叫做deism. Theism是什么呢? Theism 就是说神创造宇宙, 可是神现在 还在来管理, 投注这个宇宙, 我们宇宙上所发生的一切事, 跟神有关系, 神可以行神迹, 神可以来改变这个宇宙的方向, 比如说, 就是神能够干涉这个宇宙, okay. Namely, after God created the world, this universe, God is still in direct control of this universe. God can perform miracles. Okay. Now, this Neo-Orthodox we talked about last night. No, last night, well, some time ago. More or less, they have this deistic idea. Then they talk about, yeah, okay, God, yeah, we believe there's God, but God really does not interfere with what is going on in the world very much. Usually, that's what they say. Okay? Therefore, when they talk about salvation history, or history of salvation, they are talking about, yeah, God acted, but the act of God does not intersect with our history. Our history is totally 自动的, autonomous. 我们自动。